I have a similar poem about Drake. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Drake's rap doesn't really make money. Drake farms corn for a living. Drake is a corn farmer.
To 20 people in a cafe in Oakland, California, Steve Rogenbach is reading poems. Part poetry reading, part stand-up comedy. Steve is trying to do something that sounds kind of conceited when you first hear it. He is, in his words, trying to tell people wise things about life.
I want to give people a lot of value without asking anything back from them.
It's a calling that puts Steve on a tough path. And the question I had when sitting down with him and talking was, how does he back himself through this? Hello and welcome, I'm Darian Woods, and this is Pan Pacific. Steve is most famous for his poems like this one, where he records himself in selfie position. The video begins with rickety footage from a car dashboard in his hometown of Harbor Beach, Michigan. It's raining. In the cold, Steve's lips and nose are the color of cherries. He reads from a pier overlooking Michigan's Lake Huron.
The news said that a family got lost in a corn maze and was still in there at night, and they called 911 to get out of the maze. The news said that most people finish the maze in 25 minutes, but this family was in there for 4 hours. And I will kiss you sitting on the pier of the shallow river, and I will kiss you in your car's back seat on the gravel turnaround in the rain, and I will even kiss you another time, pushed against a dead tree in the back of a graveyard.
With the camera brought close under Steve's drawn hoodie, the YouTube video gives an intimacy to the poem in a way that a book or a reading can't.
I'm sorry I like you better than everything. I want to whisper into your smile. Come watch Cops with me.
Kenneth Goldsmith of The New Yorker is just one person who has noted that Steve follows a strong literary tradition. His profile compares Rogenbach with the celestial proclamations of William Blake. And this piece was titled, If Walt Whitman V-Logged. Steve Rogenbach has uploaded an hour and 15 minutes of him reading Walt Whitman, and he says that E.E. Cummings was the first poet he ever liked. So Rogenbach's literary base is grounded in the pantheon of widely read poets from 100 or 200 years ago, and Steve Rogenbach has been a leading figure in a contemporary set of poets and authors loosely banded together under the name Alt-Lit. Through Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram, along with ad hoc online literary journals, this alt-lit community bonds, gossips, and generates content that's often hard to differentiate from tweets, often because they are tweets. And there is this inclusivity, but also a cliquishness to Steve's poems. His style drips with non-sequiturs, and he speaks with affected generational in-jokes.
People didn't seem down with just letting it be like an impressionistic, stylistic move. They really wanted to read into each specific misspelling. They wanted to see a logic that was clearly being put into place, like a set of rules almost, or like they wanted consistency. Like they would get upset that I misspelled kiss, K-I-S, but then I correctly spelled giraffe, you know, like a harder word. And so they're like, oh, I thought it, or they'd say like, I thought it was like this kid's voice, but then you started saying all this romantic stuff. And so I was confused by that. One day in class, the teacher was even like, as somebody who doesn't use the internet or texting that much, what does this poem do for me? And I was like, maybe nothing. Maybe you're not the audience, you know?
It was 2011 in a classroom in Columbia College in Chicago. And that November, Rogenbach decided it was time to drop out of his Master of Fine Arts in Poetry, something he has called the single best decision he's ever made.
That was sort of like the sassy thing that I said in class, but also it was a true like reflection on like, wait, she isn't my audience. And if not, then why am I spending so much time getting feedback from her, especially paying for it on a weekly basis? You know, it's not the type of feedback that I need. It's not, you know, so I found my audience online, you know, and I found people who specifically liked the things that I liked and were looking like the when I experimented in a way that was exciting to me, I found that there's other people that also find that exciting.
Which leads to a more general question. Should we broaden our appeal or play to our niche?
One of the other students was writing video game themed poems, you know, and the critiques were always stuff like, I didn't get this reference, you know, I didn't know what this was talking about. Maybe you could make it more accessible to somebody who doesn't know video games. But I was like, you gotta go deeper into video games. Like, you have to be the video game, you know? You have to be the video game poet. Be completely what you're gonna be, you know? So that it's like, so that when somebody finds it who does get the video game references and is looking for that, that they're like extra excited about it, you know? Because it hasn't been like, sort of like dumbed down or like watered down so that everybody can understand it. It's like something that's special for the people. You know, it's something special for the right people.
Steve's exuberance can be in your face, and maybe even a little too male.
The way that I was doing it being a way that felt particularly male or something, particularly on the podcast, it was like, I was like, oh yeah, boom, you know? I've learned to become sort of critical of, or at least pay more attention to how I'm enacting gender and stuff. I think one of the things that is useful and a positive thing for most men is to try to sometimes take up less space, you know, because I think male socialization tells you, like, your voice is important. You should dominate the conversation. You should be loud. You should be out there. You should be active. You should be proactive. And so sometimes it can be sort of like radical and just helpful if you learn to listen more than talk.
But there is a tension here. Steve's voice is jaunty and prolific. I mean, he's already released 2 poetry books this year and aims to have read it 50 states by the end of the year. How does that square with taking up less space as a man?
But that's tough because it's like, because confidence and like asserting yourself sometimes is very important, and feeling empowered is like important and valuable, you know, and so it's kind of a tough balance maybe, but it's just something that I've been wanting to like keep in check. I love to communicate exuberance and enthusiasm because I think like it's pretty easy to transfer it to other people sometimes. Oftentimes somebody has good energy, it can spread to you, you know, and that can happen over the internet and through all these different media, and I have noticed this and I have valued this, you know, and giving people good energy through those forms. So I do value communicating excitement.
This one is called When You Point 2 Furbies at Each Other, They Start Talking to Each Other Because They Can Recognize the Other Furby Is There. Once in time, there was a real human-sized Furby named David. Actual Furby, you probably don't believe. Okay, well then I try a different story. My friend's mom had 2 Furbies when I was 19 and I visited their house. My friend's mom said, I love my Furby. Ha ha. I actually love this. Boing boing. Ha ha. Boing boing boing. Ha ha. Okay. Well, I have another story I am telling now. I changed again. Mothers aren't paid for the incredible amount of labor they put into raising children. In most heterosexual marriages, women are expected to do the unpaid labor of taking care of children and running the house, while men go earn money, which allows for actual purchasing power in society, like for food and rent. So it often feels like the woman is dependent on her husband for support, but actually the woman did just as much labor as the man, oftentimes more, because raising children is very hard, and sometimes she has another job too, and is still expected to do most of the child raising. So let's just take a moment to recognize that the women in our lives have often worked even harder than the men, but gotten very little recognition or power to run their own lives from it. The end. Shout out to the mothers. It was Mother's Day yesterday.
Perhaps the most tangible sign of Steve's commitment to the empowerment of others is the community he is building across the United States. Boost House is a place that embodies Steve Rogenbuck's values. It holds alcohol-free and drug-free community events, and it provides vegan food for those who live there, and it's housed with writers and artists.
What's your relationship with your fans?
Well, My fans. It's interesting to say fans because so many of them have become my friends, you know? So I guess you could say it's a pretty close relationship in many cases, to where I don't even feel like it's a one-way relationship like fan mostly implies.
The headquarters of this community is Boost House in Tucson, Arizona. And it's a publishing house along with just being an actual house. When Steve returns from touring, he texts, writes Facebook messages, and tweets to his 17,000 Twitter followers.
Well, I have like probably 800, maybe close to 1,000 like internet people in my phone contacts.
Steve does this from a camping mat.
I'm sleeping on a camping pad. And actually, most of the houses in Boost House are pretty unconventional. Emily sleeps on a hammock. And Rachel also sleeps on a little thin little camping mat. Allie, our new roommate, just got like a more conventional looking mattress, but it unfolded like a beautiful flower opening up out of the mail.
Boost House has published a number of poets and housed contributors, and you could live there as well if you wanted to. There is an application form on the website. It's pretty long and might require a bit of thought and reflection. But the rent is subsidized by the press.
$300 a month, and you get, you know, free rent and food. Pretty much, you could eat, it could cover all your food. Grains and legumes, you know, like lots of beans and rice. And we have a lot of bananas in the house that are free for anybody to eat because it's a high-calorie fruit.
Before I interviewed Steve, I noticed he seemed a little subdued, a little pale, and different from his usual energetic character that I see on the internet. I asked him if he wanted any food at the cafe he was reading at, and he said no thanks, and he picked up this bag of oranges from his backpack. He mentioned the cafe food not being a particularly cost-effective way to get calories, so he unpeeled these oranges, wiping the juice on his jeans. Steve lives cheaply. He writes on his website, "Please trust that I live frugally. I've lived out of my backpack for a year. I've gone a month on a $25 food budget, and I don't want to be rich ever." This is an important ethos for him. But money is still a barrier for Steve to fully realize the kind of art he wants to make.
You wrote a tweet once about a term, money sad. It was the word money and the word sad, but combined into the same word.
Specific kind of money sad that I was dealing with when I tweeted that was because I was reflecting on ways that I could do my art in such a way that, like, how could I make money from this? And basically the ways that I saw to make money seemed like not as cool or fun or helpful.
There are a few ways that Steve has managed to navigate this tension between giving away his art for free and earning enough to survive. One way is that he receives approximately $200 for every YouTube video he makes through a donations website called Patreon.
Hi everybody. I have embarked on a new way for you to support me financially if that is something that you would like to do. You can give like $2 donation per video that I make. Patreon seems good. Last summer I was focusing more on YouTube videos and I did a few a month, so the Patreon was making me an amount that was like, it made a difference for me, definitely.
Another way that Steve supports himself is that he helps his dad in Michigan with the corn harvest each year. Steve is a corn farmer.
Well, thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for listening to me. Whoop, 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 whoop.
This is Steve Rogenbach, all the way from Michigan, via Tucson.
It's true. In Oakland, California. You make me need to write love poems. This is what I might whisper in the rain. Come over and nap with me, I want you. I sleep like a raccoon in you. I sleep in you like I am a raccoon somewhere. Do you ever want to climb into a birch tree with me? Somewhere in the bottom of the rain, I want you. I turn you with slow animals. I turn you in the dark trees. I have you with me in the dark trees. I am trying to put you somewhere else in the dark trees too. I am like the giraffe of you.
Wow, I am kissing 25 birds when I kiss you. Four hours of rain in the corn. I kiss you and I dream that I am a raccoon. You trip and you fall, and instead of getting up, you stay down, and I kiss you on the ground in a cornfield at night. I am with you pushing flowers in the open mouth. I am with you pressing rain to the frosted window. It is even hard to cry now. In December, Michigan, there will be a snowbank somewhere of you and me and your warm legs, and I am in between kissing you. Sweet dreams, you are very beautiful. I will sing to you Justin Bieber with my lips on you and my hands on you. So thank you, I am far into the warm tunnels of you. I will bring to you my warm dark. We are under a pine tree and it is midnight. So thank you, I am deep into the rain of you.
Steve has a recently released new poetry anthology called Live My Life, Selected and New Poems, 2008 to 2015. And you can order that at boost-house.com. Steve's currently on a US tour, so check out steverogenbuck.com for dates. And I'm particularly excited for his appearance at Tape Fest in Brooklyn, New York on July 26. Thanks for listening. That was The Pan Pacific. I'm Darian Woods.